So samatha and vipassana have become, it's very curiously like this great controversy. You know, it's what Theravadan Buddhists in the 20th century like to argue about is meditation techniques. And it's a kind of, it's an odd thing, you know, it's a feature of the tradition. One of my friends, Patrick Carney, said that it's like a tradition is not like a set of received dogmas which are passed down from generation to generation, but tradition is much more like a family argument. And so you get together with the family at Christmas, you argue with them about the same things you argued with them the previous Christmas, and then the same things you're going to argue with them the next Christmas, you know, and that's what makes you a family. And the reason it makes you a family is because you care about it. Because the Joneses from next door are going to listen to your arguments and they're going to go, what the hell are they arguing about, you know? And so this is what samatha and vipassana is like. You know, we can argue about it, and people outside of that are thinking, you know, why don't they just meditate instead of arguing about meditation? Yeah? The question of samatha versus vipassana as a kind of doctrinal dogfight has quite a bit of a history. And when I did my book History of Mindfulness, I tried to kind of trace the roots of that from certain shifts in emphasis and perspective and so on we might find within the early suttas, and how these get taken up. One tradition might take up one bit more than the other, emphasize that, and it gradually becomes more and more reified. And so, you know, we have this thing again where conceptual categories become turned into and reified into meditation experiences. And of course, you know, samatha and vipassana are not kinds of meditation. Samatha and vipassana are qualities of the mind. And there's nowhere where the Buddha says, you know, do this kind of meditation and that's samatha, and do this kind of meditation and that's vipassana. You know, this doesn't happen. There's no exist. You know, if you look at, say, anapanasati is the clearest example, where you have the 16 stages of anapana. You know, it's pretty obvious that basically the first 12 stages mainly are pretty much on the samatha side, and then the last four steps are pretty much on the vipassana side. And if you want to also see vipassana aspects in the first part of it, then you can see that. If you want to see samatha aspects in the last part, you can also see that. There's not this hard and fast distinction. And, you know, the way the suttas presented, of course, is always that samatha and vipassana are helping each other. They're not disputing with each other. You know, they are there to help each other, and they complement different sides of the mind. Vipassana, and the classic statement of it says that samatha leads to the eradication of lust, which is like emotional defilements. Vipassana leads to the ending of ignorance, which is like the cognitive defilements. And so they're two different aspects of liberation. So it's not like one is dispensable. And it's really like this kind of left brain, right brain thing. It's like as if you can cut your brain down the middle and only enlighten one half of it, you know, by doing just vipassana only. I think historically that it would be interesting to see a much more detailed study of this, but I think historically it's essentially an expression of Buddhist modernism, which wants to tell everybody, sell Buddhism as scientific and rational and intellectual and all of these things. And therefore is suspicious of, you know, lights and emotions and feelings in meditation, so we kind of get rid of those things. And that itself is a reaction to, of course, Western colonialism and the threat to Asia. So it's very political. The whole split between samatha and vipassana is political. It's to do with national self-identity. And a country like Burma has constructed its own national Buddhist identity in the modern era, essentially around this meditation technique, and they're very proud of it, and it's the only thing which they've exported to the world, which the world really cherishes. So emotions run high, yeah? Emotions run very high. And it's not as simple as, you know, you hear all the kind of the platitudes, oh, you're going to get attached to the pleasant feeling, and all this kind of rubbish. Well, you know, you don't get attached to the pleasant feeling. The pleasant feeling happens when you let go. And it's the result of letting go. And the Buddha talks about this time and time and time again. So, any kind of meditation has to have peace of mind. And it has to have a clarity of discernment. And that's what samatha and vipassana are. And so to try to divide them up and say we're doing vipassana and the other guys are doing samatha, it's just ridiculous. It's a category mistake. It's actually reifying a quality of mind, labeling that on a meditation technique, and then saying, you know, that's what you're doing is. You're saying that is vipassana. That's not what is vipassana. Vipassana is a quality which we're trying to develop through doing these kinds of things. And so I think that, I think basically this is a very, the whole vipassana movement as a dogma and a doctrine is a very immature stage of modern Buddhism. I think it's very childish, and I think we've outgrown it. I don't think that anybody who seriously considers what the Buddha said in the suttas and has any sort of appreciation for the historical context of Buddhist scriptures can seriously maintain that the Buddha taught a path of pure vipassana.